Hello and welcome. Welcome to Step Up Nigeria's podcast. This is our second podcast in the series and we're glad to have you listening. My name is Oluwafemi Adeola from Step Up Nigeria and I will be facilitating today's discussion. The topic for today is the forgotten rural communities, a cry for basic services. I have with me here my colleague Kibukunluwa Ijaobo and our executive director Onyeo. I also have some invited guests with me, Mrs. Rose Gia and Favour Womini from Glushid, but I'll allow them to introduce themselves, so please go ahead.
My name is Mrs. Rose Gia, the Director General of Global Center for Human Reform and Entrepreneurship Development, Glushid. And in Glushid, we promote competitiveness among micro, small and medium enterprises through collaboration, support and partnership with stakeholders in both the public and private sector. Part of activities we do here is to facilitate linkages and create platforms for MSMEs to sustain relationships with stakeholders and also provide good services and effectively to their members. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Favour Womini from Global Center for Human Empowerment and Entrepreneurship Development. I'm a program officer. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Thank you, Favour. Thank you, Mrs. Rose. Okay, so the Step Up Nigeria team and our partners at Glushid recently visited some rural communities in northern Nigeria to find out service delivery challenges and ways in which they felt marginalized and disconnected from the rest of society at large. So I'll start with Ibukun. You visited Kogi State recently. What were your observations? What were your experiences like there?
Thank you very much, Feromi. I think the one that struck me the most about the service delivery So we visited two communities, Kwakwa community and Kusa community in Kogi local government in Kogi State. And in Kusa community, the one that struck me the most is the fact that there had not been electricity in that community at all. So like, they don't even have an idea of what is it to have electricity from the government. And it's very sad because steps have actually been taken towards ensuring that the community has electricity. A transformer was erected in the community 5 years ago, and this brought hope to the community actually because they felt that the erection of the transformer would translate to the fact that they would start having electricity from the government. But unfortunately, since that time to date, there's still no electricity in the community. And some of them have generators, which of course they can't fuel all the time. So just once in a while, someone turns on their gen, everybody goes to charge their phones in that person's house. And the other sad part is the community actually do not know how to, who to complain to, like who to hold responsible for this particular thing going on in the community. They just feel that, or they just hope that one day someone will come and solve this problem for them, or they will be remembered that a transformer has been erected and electricity has not still been mounted on the transformer. So it's really sad to know that, in other places around, like we see people have not had electricity for a certain period of time, but this is like they've never even had it before in the community. Mm-hmm. This is really sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand how that must be. Thank you. I'll move on to Madam Rose. What was your experience like in Kogi State as well?
Well, we traveled together with Ibukun to the two rural communities. And indeed, what she said is quite saddening. But to add to that is the fact that school that is supposed to be a basic need and an agent for social change is absent in such communities. So whoever wanted to go to school will have to travel kilometers to be able to access basic education. For instance, in the Kusa community, there is a private school there, but it produces only from primary 1 to 4.
Wow.
And so if you're going beyond primary 4, you have to go outside the community to do that. And in the Kwakwa community, they don't even have a primary school around them. So they need to go to the next community to be able to access that. And then the issue of healthcare service delivery. In both communities, they don't have healthcare facilities domiciled in their communities. They have to travel beneath, I think, 5 kilometers to be able to access healthcare service delivery. Even though the community seems to be comfortable with the services offered in the healthcare system. But then the cry is that if such services can be done, situated in their own community, it will be better patronized. And so they have the option. I mean, the only option available to them is to, patronize the traditional healthcare service delivery providers. And then in addition to that, it's so sad that the electricity issue, really, there is a government agency that is responsible for rural electrification.
Yes.
And incidentally, the zonal office of that agency, Rural Electrification Agency, is in Lokoja, the headquarters of the Kogi State. Mm. And yet, it's so embarrassing that communities within that locale, that state, do not have electricity and do not even know what electricity is. And this hampers a lot of, progress within the community. And one striking thing that, struck me was that within the community, there are land issues within the community. Mm-hmm. Now, I give you a very, funny but yet very serious indication of restiveness in Kusa community. In Kusa community, all that the youth were asking for was a signboard. And when we asked, why do you need a signboard? Mm-hmm. And they said they wanted to their community identified. In history, Kogi State is known for communal clashes, and it's all bordered on boundary demarcations. And so if the youth are saying we need a signboard to be able to promote or to make our own village visible, then it means something is brewing underneath. If that need is not addressed, and they don't see it as a community thing, they are seeing it as government should provide a signboard for us.
Yeah.
Because they think it's a right to have a signboard, it's the government that should promote their community. You see, it gives room for agitations. Because if their boundaries are not delineated, then it means there will be problems. And why they were saying that was because the community before them had what I would call the social community or the presence of the government. And then the community after them also does. And so they feel it's probably because they don't have a signboard that the government does not recognize their existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very harmful to even socioeconomic development in the state and in the country. Mm-hmm. So by and large, I think the service delivery issues are very, very key and very, very serious if you look at it vis-a-vis economic development,
yes,
and the general development of the country.
Thank you very much, Madam Rose. I will move to Onyi. Onyi, you visited communities in Nasarawa State. What were your observations? What was peculiar to you? What stood out in your visit to those communities?
Yes, there was the issue of the rural roads. The roads in those communities were appalling, really. And I'm just going to go back again to what Madam Rose here has just said about, about those people who felt a signboard would solve their problem. I see it even a bit more symbolic in the sense that literally they feel marginalized, they feel forgotten. So they feel that, okay, maybe people have forgotten us because we don't have a signboard. So just a simple signboard would make government realize we exist or we are here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, and that's the same thing we saw in the Guruku in Nasarawa State and the other Dairy community, the roads were horrible. And just linked to what Madam Rose said, they also complained those in the secondary school had to travel very long. They don't have a secondary school in the community we visited, so they had to travel long distances to the other community. And the bad roads, was also not, did not help matters, because then probably something that would have even trekking in good wood conditions,
yes,
would have taken, or going by transport or whatever, like bikes, which is what most people use them, which would have taken a bit shorter, was now, becoming like an hour trek to school. So I think that just like the electricity challenges that has been mentioned by Ibuku and the healthcare issue and needs to really be addressed. I think that the issue of rural roads, I don't know, I guess it's the local government or whoever, the state government, who are responsible for that, really need to you know, at least, even though it's just a little tight, a little bit, where they can move, because it also affects farmers moving their goods from one place to another. You know, so and the roads, when I mean they're bad, they're really, really, you can't even, like, it was really like a very, like, I felt for people who had to go, you know, go there every day. We just came for a brief, you know, for a visit to those communities, but people live there day by day, and you wonder how they're able to move from point A to point B. You know, and it's becoming norm, you know, it's like they, you know, but that is one of the issues the women, you know, and even the communities, when we discussed with them, really agitated about. They were really begging, you know, for government to really build their roads so that they can at least move their goods, and people can actually go to school, you know, at least in good time, and they can actually do other things in other communities without, you know, going on a very long journey.
Okay, thank you. So Favour, you went for the same trip with Oyin. What other observations did you have?
Thank you very much, Fairami. We visited the Dari community and Guruku community. And one thing that was very striking to me, adding to what Oyin already said, their water situation there is terrible. We took a trip to see where they get their drinking water and water they use up. It's very disheartening to know that they share same water as cows. The cows, they defecate on the water, they step on the water, and the community members, women, will have to fetch from the same water because it's the only source of water they have in that community. They drink from there, they bathe from there, everything they do from there. And getting water that's a bit okay, that they'll have to wait, maybe in the rainy season they get water from the rains. That's about the best water they can get, or maybe travel very long distance to get water. And I'm interviewing some of the community members, it was revealed to us that yes, they have a representative in the government that has come and promised us that time and time to provide a borehole and all of it. And it's all stories to get their votes, and it ends there. So there are a real issue in that community. I think water they are really having serious issues with that.
Wow, it's quite interesting to hear that, you know, in this day and age, there's still this level of backwardness and forgottenness in some communities in Nigeria. I mean, the absence of light is almost unheard of. I'm sure if you repeat that to anyone, they would probably be very surprised. But what I want to move on to, you know, South Nigeria is working on a book project called Emeka's Money, and Emeka's Money seeks to help children see the connection between everyday dealings and corruption. So my next question here would be, what role do we think corruption has played in affecting service delivery? How has this corruption that we speak about, how can we link corrupt activities to why these communities have not been able to receive their services?
I think, okay, for example, in Kosa community,
yes,
I'm almost sure, okay, I can't say for sure, but maybe to a very large extent, the project, the electricity project might be a finished project in the office, in the sense that it will be written that that project has been completed and the file is closed, maybe. So it's very sad to know that project starts and they are not seen to be completed, if you get what I mean. Like, it's not, there's nothing in place to ensure that a project is properly completed and people have started enjoying
the service.
So that shows that, yeah, there's definitely someone that is supposed to be responsible for that. And we can't say for sure if the person has reported back saying, oh, this service is now being enjoyed by that community. But we know for sure that somehow that project has been neglected, and the person that is supposed to see that project to completion did not do that.
Yeah, so,
Favour, please. Okay, I think we should start by really getting to know what this corruption thing is. And by a short definition, I say it is the illegitimate use of power to benefit private interests. Like, reading on what my colleague here said already, most of these projects are done in purpose, and it's not reflecting there in the communities. Okay, which means the budget has been, money has been allocated for that project, but instead of benefiting the community, somebody diverts the money for a personal interest, and the community people suffer. So in every sense, corruption has really affected service delivery in communities here in Nigeria.
Okay. And just to add, because for the poles to be erected in some of the communities showed that at some point allocation was, there was some budget allocation, for that particular project. And what is more disturbing is that nobody cares, like Farah Idukun said, that, you know, to actually even monitor or see whether those projects were completed, you know, and I think that's a key point. And people know that they're not going to be checked anywhere, nobody's going to do any monitoring, so they go ahead and just, you know, just show something to show that they actually did something, but then just forget it. And the next project, and the most disturbing fact, we haven't, there's no evidence for this yet, we haven't looked into, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's not even being allocated in the budget every year or something, you know, that same project, but yet it's never completed. The rural communities have no voice, they have no one to, you know, and they actually said it when we met with them, that they don't even know who to complain to, they don't even know who to, you know, lay these complaints that these projects have not been completed. So I think it's definitely, there are some signs that there are some corruption in these elements in that.
Okay, thank you. I'll direct this question first to Madam Rose, and we can all contribute afterwards. But what role do you think civil society has in creating this change? What can organizations do to help these rural communities see the change they want?
Well, this is interesting. I think it's very interesting for civil society. Like, as a civil society person, I think I've gotten a lot of program points in our interaction with the community. For instance, the issue of corruption, really, what was striking was that they know corruption exists. They know that somehow somebody was sent to come and do something in their community, but they didn't know how to follow through. But what's so exciting about it is the fact that they are willing to follow through to ensure that such things were brought to the community for their benefit. So before our arrival, they didn't know that it was a right as a citizen to have light, to have healthcare delivery services, to have schools, to have even water in their community. But our interaction with them showed the enthusiasm with the people. And so as civil society operators or actors, it's very key to design a program that will facilitate advocacy for these people, including them as participants in the whole process. And then creating more awareness and educating them on the need to have their voices heard. And having their voices heard would have to be in a coordinated manner. Because when we try to even find out if there are civil society working in the community, or if they've ever known about, you know, the existence of any civil society working in their community and, you know, addressing such issues, they said no. The only thing they know is their village meeting. And in their village meetings, they just, well, maybe draw up programs there, and it ends there. For instance, they have a politician coming to campaign. They have a program waiting for him, and to tell him, we need water, we need road, and all that. And when he comes, he tells them, oh, you've gotten it. Just give me your vote. And the day he leaves there, that is the end. If after elections, they don't even get to see the representative. When they even go to take the trouble of going, they don't even get to meet with the representative, give them one excuse or the other. So there's a lot of sensitization that has to be done, a lot of advocacy that has to be done on the issue. But most importantly, along with the citizens of the community, because it's only when they are part of all these activities that there will be sustainability. Otherwise, whatever intervention that is done will only be done and completed within the project period. But if they are involved inclusively, owning the process, then it will be sustained, because they would have had the knowledge to advocate on other issues other than what they were led to do. And the good thing about it is that the community people are willing to be led into such issues.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Madam Rose. So what now that we've discussed that these issues exist and that corruption has a part to play and that civil society can help to combat this, but on the part of the government, What do we think the government can put in place, you know, to deliver quality services to citizenry? What can the government do? What should they do?
I'll come in here. I think one of the things, just to, not direct, I mean, it's directly linked to your question, but some, you know, but more just following on Madam Rose, one of the things I think that needs to be done, and it also involves government as well to make the decision, is the issue of local government autonomy. So there's a need to, because at the end of the day, it's difficult. The rural communities are far away from the where the decision making is. And the state, you know, we all know that the state governments really control the local government budgets. And I think it's high time really, I mean, and I know that NOGE, the National Union of, I think, Local Government Employees, are actually seriously campaigning for local government autonomy. And I'm a big fan of local government autonomy because I think in terms of service delivery and even corruption, is going to really help reduce it. Because even if corruption, even if local government chairman plan to, you know, steal local government funds, it's going to be a bit more difficult because actually those in the rural communities are actually quite, and I'll give an example, actually quite, what do you call it, you can't just steal their funds. Yeah. They're quite enthusiastic. They're the ones that, if you notice within the community, they have community, like a susu, where they contribute money, and you cannot steal their money. You cannot steal money. Why is it that you cannot steal money from those, you know, from those communities where they have like their contribution? You can't.
So you can't even break their law.
You can't even break their law. They are very. So that's the irony, and that is why, and also they're the ones that vote during the election. So it's going to be so easy. The local government, if the local government chairman is giving, you know, the powers to like more budget reallocations and giving the power to really do what they're supposed to do when it comes to service delivery, I can bet you that would be a good starting point, because then we can talk about the fact that you know what is clear in the local government budget. You publish the budget in the community, you know, say this is what this community, this local government, XYZ communities are receiving, one healthcare center, you know, this road will be built. And then those people that, those community members within those, you know, areas mentioned can actually track. You don't even need, you know, people coming from outside to tell them this. They can actually, they know who to go to. If it goes wrong, we know who to hold responsible.
Yes.
Like passing through those rural roads, you know, and even the passing through the poles that were not connected, I kept on thinking, where do we start from? So, okay, the rural electrification project, that's fine, but they're a bit far. But when we have like a local government chairman that we know has the budget, if you meet them now, they'll tell you they're not the ones responsible. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very important that we actually strengthen the local government, keep them down, and then we'll hold them responsible. So even if there's corruption, even corruption at that level, it's easier to detect. The community members can hold them to account. So I think we need to advocate more for that. I think that would really help go a long way in improving service delivery in the rural communities.
Yeah, and I think in addition to what she's saying, I think there should be a very strong monitoring mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just enough that projects are implemented, but there should be monitoring. Because if there was a monitoring mechanism, all those goals that were there should have been identified as being there without the connecting lines. So a monitoring mechanism is really, really very important and very necessary when projects and programs are being implemented. It has that, to have that.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. So any final comments? Did anyone observe anything else in those communities? What was their business export? Anything else that you'd like to add to the conversation before we close?
Okay, like the Guruku and Dari community in Nasarawa State, we observed that these people are very illustrious. They're into shea butter production and black soap. So, and they do everything there locally and even export outside the country. I think they will need some support if someone can go there and maybe set up a modern way of production for them. That will go a long way in really assisting them as well.
Community.
Yeah, in the community at large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not just setting up the enterprise, the modern enterprise for them, but in Blue I must say, we've identified a business outlet there, and that is to facilitate their production process with those entrepreneurs that will be willing to take it on the value chain.
Mm-hmm.
And taking it along the value chain will mean making it competitive, will mean also creating value for what, you know, their resources are, from what the resources are around them, and then linking them also to regulatory agencies that can certify such products according to, you know, regulations of production, regulations of processing, and also even for exporting. And so they need a lot of business education to be able to produce competitively, package, brand, and even export to end foreign exchange.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. This has been a very stimulating discussion. Glosheed, how can we get to know you better? Where can we follow up?
Okay, Glosheed, you can reach Glosheed at Suite 113 Ambis Plaza, Wuses on 5, Abuja FCT. And on our website, you can go to www.glosheed.org.ng, which is spelled GLOCHEED.org.ng. And on the phone, you can get us on 080-3625-3839. You can reach Glosheed on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Favour. And remember, Step Up Nigeria. Visit our website at stepupnigeria.org. Check out our weekly blog posts and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at step_up_Nigeria. And also look out for our book project, Emeka's Money, that is launching this September. And we'll keep you updated. Thank you for listening, and we were glad to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.